And you're listening to WSLR 96.5 LPFM in Sarasota, Florida. We are your true community radio station. We have a great edition of the Surreal News coming right up. Time to get going. We got a packed show this morning. All right, you don't want to touch that dial. All right, Lou, who's on our show this morning?
Well, I'll tell you what, Steve. You know, we do have a great show coming up. I know we always do, but this is particularly great. Joining us first this morning is going to be Pamela Goodman, first vice president of the Florida League of Women Voters. And she was also the chair of the Fair Districts campaign. She's going to be telling us a little bit about the league's lawsuit. Well, they're one of several who are suing Congress over that little redistricting plan.
I'm so excited. I've always wanted to have the League of Women Voters on, and we have breaking news about it.
Absolutely.
So I'm
absolutely. Well, this is going on right now. I mean, they've warned me. You know, there are some rules. They can't really, because they are involved in the suit, you know, talk about what's going on in court, but they can give us some great background.
And rather than doing the news, she has to come on early, so we're going to do the news later on in the show. We're going to start with her very early in this show, so don't touch that dial. It's not going to be a few minutes. She's going to be on very quickly.
That's right, and that also works out well for us, because we're being called from the UK by Jean-Philippe Tremblay, who directed the movie Shadows of Liberty, which is going to be screened, by the way, here in Fogartyville, June 5th, this next Thursday. And that sounds like a riveting, great expose of corporations corrupting the media.
Censorship, you know? All of one
censorship
of my favorite
on.
Subjects.
Absolutely, you know, and this sounds like just, I saw the trailer. I could see obviously the
We're
going to
have Amy Goodman. You know, we're going to talk about Amy Goodman. We're going to hear about Danny Glover. I mean, there's all kinds of
lot,
great.
A lot of great people in it. You know, and I can't wait to speak to him about the making of this film and its message, what it's actually about.
All right, so in a minute we've got Pam Goodman coming on. Let's just do a quick news item and get us warmed up here, and then we have our first guest coming on very quickly.
Okay. All right, Steve. You know, I don't know if you know anybody has heard about this, but I thought it was bizarre. I mean, police say a man holding his breath while driving through an Oregon tunnel fainted and caused a three-car crash. The Oregon State Police say a 19-year-old man caused a three-car crash when he fainted while holding his breath as he drove through a tunnel northwest of Portland. According to the news release, Daniel J. Calhoun of Skanamish, Washington, told investigators he fainted Sunday while holding his breath in Highway 26 tunnel near the community of Manning. His car, a 1990 Toyota Camry, drifted across the center line and crashed head-on with a Ford Explorer. Both vehicles struck the tunnel walls before the pickup hit the Camry. Four people, including Callan, his passenger, 19-year-old Bradley Meyerling of Edmonds, Washington, suffered non-life-threatening injuries. Police say Calhoun has been cited for reckless driving, three counts of reckless endangerment, and fourth-degree assault. Some people hold their breaths in tunnels as part of a game or a superstition. Now, that's news to me. That's the surreal news part of it. I never knew anybody did that in tunnels. I mean, I certainly didn't when I went through the tunnel going to Logan, the Holland tunnel.
You say you did do that?
No, I would not do that. Absolutely not.
Actually, I remember.
I mean, if I held my breath, it was because it was like so hairy.
I remember going through a tunnel and thinking, "There's a lot of poisons in this air. I really don't want to breathe."
Yeah.
You know, when I was a kid going through some of those tunnels in New York. Not necessarily breath holding, but thinking, gee, this air is not clean. That's interesting. It brings back memories. Okay. Enough about tunnels. Why don't you introduce our guest? We have Pam on the line.
Absolutely. I mean, this morning we've got Pamela Goodman. As I've said, she's the first vice president of the Florida League of Women Voters and was the chair of the Fair Districts campaign for the league and current president of the Fair Districts of Florida. And while we cannot talk about what's going on in the courtroom as we speak, Pamela can fill us in on the beginnings of the lawsuit and the league and others. The league and others have filed against the state legislature over the 2012 redistricting plan. Good morning, and thanks for coming on, Pamela.
Thank you very much for having me on. I appreciate it. And I do apologize. We are the current trial, which is being heard up in Tallahassee, began May 19th, a week. We're going almost into 2 weeks, and we look to be wrapping it up next Wednesday. Since we are in very active litigation, and there is a lot of press out on about it, I can speak lightly to what the press has reported on it, but I can't speak directly. But just a little bit of background of why we're in court again, and this certainly isn't the first time that we've been in court over this issue. Florida was one of the most gerrymandered states across the country over the course of the last 30, 40, 50 years. The league has actually been working. It was one of the first issues that the league took up when we came to Florida and started doing our work down here and became an organization 57 years ago. And so through the last 57 years, we have worked on getting redistricting standards, improving redistricting, when both parties have been in power, when the Democrats have been in power, when the Republicans have been in power. And, you know, it's kind of like the hen guarding, the fox guarding the hen house. Legislators have been in control of drawing maps. And in the state of Florida, they have drawn them very selfishly up until the Fair Districts Amendments were passed, really to protect their own jobs. Once again, very gerrymandered, drawn to definitely protect incumbent seats, to favor particular political parties of whatever party was in power at the time. And finally, in the last 6 years, with the League of Women Voters being the lead group, and more importantly, over 3.1 million citizens in the state of Florida being educated on the subject, in 2010 voted to amend our Constitution and put Amendments 5 and 6 into our Constitution, which basically set standards for the legislature, which they had no standards before, set standards for the legislature that said they could not draw districts, and we draw districts every 10 years after the census. Redistricting is a sport, a blood sport that is done every 10 years. So what they said is that the legislature could not draw districts that favored incumbents, that favored any political party, that districts had to be compact, they had to be contiguous, they had to make sense geographically, they had to follow natural geographical boundaries. I mean, we had some districts that went over three separate counties, you know, that jumped over rivers, then came down a road and crossed over the road to go back up the road. I mean, it was really, you know, a Horshock test, a lot of the districts and what they looked like. And there's three areas that we draw districts for: both the state House seats, the state Senate seats, and our congressional seats. And the congressional seats were extremely important this year because our population rise. We picked up two additional congressional seats in the state of Florida. So that map especially was important to the people drawing it. So these amendments passed, giving the legislators standards. There were three or four lawsuits in the course of just getting them on the ballot. They passed, and since passed, there were another two or three lawsuits with the legislature fighting the intention of the constitutional amendments. But finally, did their responsibility in 2012 and produce maps out of the legislature at the end of legislature, three maps for the House, for the Senate, and for the congressional districts. The League and our coalition partners, Common Cause being one, and NAACP, Democracia, we've had numerous coalition partners on various lawsuits and working on this throughout the whole process. In looking at the maps, we were pleased with the House maps. The maps for the House of Representatives did follow the standards set forth that, once again, 3.1 million or 63% of Florida citizens passed with their vote in 2010. But we were concerned about both the congressional maps and the state Senate maps, and have been pursuing litigation on both of those sets of maps since 2012, so for the past 2 years. The current case that's being held up in Tallahassee is a very precedent-setting case. It's becoming an extremely interesting case, and once again, the press has been reporting on it really throughout the state almost daily. But it is contesting. We are the plaintiffs, the League of Women Voters, and some other groups. We are the lead plaintiffs. The defendant is the Florida legislature, and we are contesting that the congressional maps are not drawn with the standards set forth in the Constitution, and also that they were not drawn in a state of complete transparency and with no malintention to protect incumbents or protect a particular political party.
Okay, great. We're speaking with Pamela Goodman, and I've got a quick question for Pamela, you know, about that. Now, you know, what seems to be the problem? You know, I mean, I know, there's, you know, some indications of what I read in the newspaper, and that's why I think this is okay to mention that, you know, there were, you know, some, there was some input from Republican political operatives to the folks who were actually drawing the districts, and isn't that one of the ways that, you know, you all are trying to prove, or someone's trying to prove that, you know, perhaps there was some bias towards incumbents?
Well, the and once again, it's been reported in the paper, but there's been many Republican consultants, political consultants, that have taken a stand in the case, whose emails have been they've been deposed, and whose emails have been recaptured, that seemingly shows a trail of heavy involvement from outside individuals into leaders of the legislature and legislators themselves with this map drawing process, and that it was done with a very heavy political leaning hand, and records seemingly show that political consultants were paid an immense amount of money to be involved in this process, of which standards clearly say the legislature and the legislature alone are the ones responsible for drawing these maps.
Yeah, I'm curious. Who paid that money? Was it donors? You know, the Republican Party, the PACs?
In one instance, it was reported that it was the Republican Party that paid one of the consultants. And, you know, once again, I really don't want to go into detail, but it's out there. It's been reported. The Miami Herald, the Tampa Tribune, the Palm Beach Post have all been following this extremely, really all the major news media has been following it extremely closely. And in fact, I'll speak on their part. They actually filed a complaint yesterday with the court because it was somewhat precedent setting. There were some documents, over 538 pages of documents involved in the case, that the litigants, the League of Women Voters and our groups, wanted presented as evidence, and the defendants did not want presented as evidence, and that became a bone of contention. That decision went to the Supreme Court in the middle of this trial, and the Supreme Court ruled that they could be presented as evidence, but in a closed courtroom. And the courtroom needed to be closed because the defendants said that it was trade secrets of their business, the process of what they did, and that it therefore should not be public knowledge. And the news media filed strong objection to the fact that the courtroom be closed. the plaintiffs in the case are pleased that the evidence will be on record and part of this trial. And this is not a jury trial. This is just a judge trial. And that the judge will be privy to these documents. But the press, you, and all of your peers did complain that they would not be allowed in the courtroom during the questioning and during the revealing of those documents.
Yeah, you know, I did see that exactly in the paper, and you presented it absolutely perfectly. That was great because, you know, I thought, too, you know, that it's great that it's being admitted in court. You know, because I think it's important for the judge to, you know, see this, you know, to make a proper decision. But, you know, also to, you know, as a former reporter, it is a little sad that, you know, we can't comment on it either and see what sort of tricks they're getting into. You know, moving away from the trial a little bit, but the actual trial. You know, and I know this is a really obvious question, but I would like you to, you know, respond to it. Why is this so important to residents of Florida and everybody else? I mean, do we get a fair and balanced legislature?
Lou, that is very, very, very a very, very good question, and this is the essence of why the league has been so involved with this. When you look at Florida, we are such a very interesting state in our political makeup. We have about 500,000 more registered Democrats than Republicans in the state of Florida. And, of course, that varies depending upon what portion of the state that you look at. And we have a very high percentage of no-party affiliations. Over 20% of citizens have no-party affiliation. And actually, that percentage has grown in the course of the last 4 years rather than diminished. Not that our representative government should represent exactly that kind of registered voter numbers, but right now we do have a Republican-controlled both House, Senate, and executive branch of the government. And when you ask, well, how can that be, it all leads back to, well, fair districts. When you look at how the districts are drawn, voters should have a very clear choice. There should not be incumbent protection when a voter goes to the polls. And in many instances, when these districts are drawn, an incumbent is completely protected. The districts are drawn with a high percentage of voters in that particular party's representation. And there's a lot of times where, and you know this yourself in your part of the state, where there's a lot of these offices that aren't even contested, that a voter doesn't have a choice between two viable candidates. And that's why that is the essence of why the league has fought this and believes that it is so important. We believe in fair elections, and we believe that every voter should have a choice when they go to the polls to make an informed choice on the person who represents them in government.
And also, too, you know, I mean, I guess, you know, we see a lot of examples when the legislature is stacked like it is, where they sort of ignore the general well-being of most of the population to pander to their specific constituency with no fear of paying any consequence at the polls, you know. And I think perhaps, you know, the best example of that could be, you know, its steadfast refusal to expand Medicaid. I mean, what's up with that?
Well, that is another subject that I'm happy to speak about. I'm not happy about the subject, but the league has worked during this past legislative session very, very strongly. Not worked, has advocated strongly that the legislature reverse that decision to refuse the $52 billion in Medicaid over the next 10 years. Coming to the state of Florida. These are Florida taxpayer dollars that are now being siphoned out to other states for Medicaid payment. And they belong here. They belong in the state of Florida, being paid out to the people that put the money in paying their taxes. So we lobbied strongly to get it even as a subject brought up again during the legislative session. And we really just they strongly, especially in the House, House Speaker Will Weatherford refused to have it be brought to the floor for discussion. So we're continuing to fight that battle. And just as you do, you have to keep moving things along the road. It took us 57 years for fair districts, and we're still in the courts on that. But this is something that we feel extremely is important to the citizens of Florida, and are continuing to advocate and push that agenda now that legislature is out. And for sure, we will be back next year pushing to get that again on the agenda and through the legislative session.
Well, you know, I don't want to leave this subject right away, because I'll tell you what, you know, it's got so much irony in it, it might as well be an anvil. You know, Will Weatherford, his family benefited from Medicaid, number one.
That is true.
You know, number two, it ends up costing, one of the reasons why they can steadfastly refuse to, accept the deal with the federal government and expand health coverage to, you know, I guess a little over a million Floridians, is because they claim that the federal government is, quote-unquote, lying and is not going to hold up its end, and it's going to end up costing the residents of Florida more. But, in fact, by refusing it, isn't it true that it's already costing them close to $400 million a year extra in some other charges that would have been eliminated by this? I believe to do with indigent folks going to the emergency room or something.
Exactly. That is a very, very good point. Of course, we can't forget that this is the same legislature that put an amendment on the ballot in 2010, and I don't know if citizens recall this, but there was actually an amendment on the ballot that asked Florida to secede from the American Health Care Act. And this was after it had passed, it had become law in the country. But there was an amendment that it wouldn't have stood because national Trump state law, but our legislature wanted to send a verbal message to Congress that Florida was not supporting the American Health Care Act. And Floridians did not pass that amendment, and so that message was not sent. But that amendment was put on the ballot by our Florida legislature. So it is that same legislature that is also fighting these Medicaid funds. So it kind of follows. Not anything that's logical in our opinion, and certainly not anything that is for the health care, both financially and socially responsible for the Florida citizens.
Yeah, you know, I was gonna bring that up. How this whole move is you know, no matter what they say, the real motivation of it seems to be, you know, cold-blooded political calculus and just trying to make the president look bad, basically. You know, which Rick Scott has tried to do, even though he kind of backpedaled on his original refusal, you know, and kind of tossed the ball over to Will Weatherford. You know, you had said that the league is continuing to work for this change. Now it's been 2 years down, so that's 2 years out of 10 that funding is gone, but they can still, you know, reinstate it, can't they?
Yes.
Or they can still vote for it in the next legislative session and get in on, like, the last 7 years. You know, from your perspective, I suppose, dealing with the legislature all the time, you know, is there any hope that this thing is ever going to, you know, happen?
There is. We need to keep the pressure on. We need citizens to keep the pressure on. You know, many citizens kind of throw up their arms and say, what does my voice really matter? It does matter. Your voice does matter. Your voice particularly matters in an election year, and that's why we did believe that we had a good shot at really addressing this year because of it being an election year. And Governor Scott said that if it came to his desk, he actually would have approved it. But unfortunately, it never got, as I said, out of the legislature to the governor's desk. But this is what the League of Women Voters believes in strongly. We are a grassroots organization. And we kind of follow the creed of one of my favorite sayings is from Margaret Mead, don't for 1 minute believe that one person can change the world, for in fact that is the only thing that has. And so we do believe that individual citizens coming together with a voice can make a difference and can change what we believe is wrong and make right, and that is the essence of the league. So I encourage citizens to speak to their legislators. They're home now. They're back on their home turf. Make appointments. Go in. Be outraged, and want to know the answer of why they would allow dollars to flow out of the state of Florida to other states, Medicaid, rather than keeping it here and helping the citizens that put that money into it. And keeping the pressure on our legislators as we head into session next year.
You know, and the real human cost of this is that there have been deaths attributed here in Florida to the failure to expand Medicaid. I read a story in the paper just the other day about a woman who was not able to get, you know, treatment for a heart ailment who died because she fell in that, you know, netherworld between, you know, being able to get Obamacare and qualifying for Medicare under the old rules. You know, and that's something
there are tragic stories daily. Yeah, that is very true, and that is the social side of it that is heartbreaking. So there's a financial implication, and just as important, or more importantly, the social implication side. That once again, people should be outraged. We certainly are, and I will put in a plug, if I may. join the League of Women Voters. We have leagues all around the state of Florida. We have two separate organizations. One is an education, the League of Women Voters education, and that's where we educate, go out and educate voters on issues, on subjects, and we are a nonpartisan organization. We do not support political parties, or we never endorse candidates. But we do inform voters. We want voters to be informed, so we hold various candidate forums. We have a speakers bureau that informs voters on ballot amendments, amendments that are on the ballot, and other issues. And then we have an advocacy, a League of Women Voters advocacy, where we do advocate on positions that we take on certain issues. And the positions that we take is not our state board sitting around just kind of coming up with what we think is right. Our positions are based on now close to 100 years of long study and consensus on many, many, many issues regarding health care, as we just talked about, redistricting, as we just talked about, election reform, many issues regarding water and land. We were instrumental in getting one of the amendments on the ballot this year, the Land Legacy Amendment, which protects our springs and land. So we cover a multitude of issues based on many, many, many years of study and consensus on both the state level, the local level, and the national level. So please, LWV, thefloridavoter.org is our state site. www.thefloridavoter.org is the League of Women Voters Florida state site, and we can direct you to a league that is closest to you where you live, a local league, for you to join and just be support or become very active and be a citizen gladiator, as we call them, and help us in our missions.
That is terrific, and I just want to remind our listeners, we've been speaking with Pamela Goodman, the first vice president of the Florida League of Women Voters, and I personally would like to thank her very much for coming on, and I'm glad you gave us all that information, because I think everybody really needs to, you know, find out about the league and hopefully join it. Thanks again, Pamela.
Thank you very much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Have a great day.
Thank you. You too.
Right.
All right, great. I've always wanted to have them on. That's the first time this show we've had the Leaving Women Voters on.
I'll tell you what, they are really terrific. They're very easy to get a hold of.
So she said this court case is going to be ending soon, within a week or so.
Yes, it is.
Right? And then we should have her back on and explain, well, what's going on and actually what was behind the scenes. This program, the Surreal News, we've been very lucky because we've had on the actual lawyers involved with many of these suits. For example, from Common Cause, we've had Steve Spaulding on, and he was involved with, for example, the Citizens United and those. All right, let's get to a quick Media Matters Minute, and then we're going to have a little bit more news and our next guest.
This is the Media Matters Minute. I'm Hillary Tone. On Fox's Outnumbered, co-host Sandra Smith defended new Republican legislation to roll back school nutrition standards while omitting that the pushback on healthier standards are from a group that receives funding from companies that sell food to schools.
You've got 90% of schools that are now reporting increased costs. So it's getting worse by the day. And I want to quote Congressman Rodney Davis, a Republican from Illinois. He says, we want to do everything that we can to fight childhood obesity. But he said that these schools are simply asking for flexibility rather than this top-down approach coming from Washington. They just want some flexibility because it's being forced down their throat right now.
While Smith did not disclose the source of her information, the Associated Press notes that these claims come from the School Nutrition Association, which receives a significant amount of funding from companies that sell food to schools. Contributors include major food companies like Coca-Cola, Kellogg's, Domino's Pizza, and Tyson Foods. The Washington Post reports that the food industry has tried to weaken food standards in the past. In 2011, the industry succeeded in changing the rules so that pizza with tomato sauce could be counted as a vegetable. For more on this and other stories, visit MediaMatters.org.
And we'd like to thank Media Matters. They are a nonprofit. They're out of Washington, D.C., and they spend their time talking about media misinformation. And we're going to talk a little bit more about media misinformation. You've been listening to WSLR 96.5 LPFM in Sarasota, Florida, your true community radio station. This program is The Surreal News, your weapon of mass instruction. And I am so delighted to have our next guest on. And Lou is going to be doing this interview. Lou, tell us about our next great guest.
Well, I'll tell you what, calling in from the UK this morning is Jean-Philippe Tremblay. He directed a documentary called Shadows of Liberty that will be screened here in Fogartyville next Thursday on June 5th. The film focuses on examples of, I guess, dishonest reporting of the media at the behest of corporations. Welcome, Jean. Thanks for coming on.
Hey, thank you for having me on.
Yeah, that's great. You know, first off, you know, I'm always curious about how people got where they are. How did you decide to do this project? And give us a little bit about your background as a filmmaker and a journalist.
Yeah, well, I'm primarily a filmmaker. I'm from Canada. I come from a small town in northern Quebec. So French is my first language. I'm French Canadian. And I guess growing up, I've always been fascinated by documentary films. We have a great tradition in Canada, whether it's from the National Film Board or other independent filmmakers, of documentary filmmaking. And growing up, it was always a dream of mine to be involved, to actually do my own projects. And as a teenager and through school, I was always part of filmmaking cooperatives and groups, and I studied filmmaking in university, and I did a master's here in London, England, at the London Film School, where I'm speaking to you from. And I guess after I finished my master's in 2006, I really just wanted to make my first feature documentary. And I didn't know what subject I was going to approach, although I did ground myself that I knew I wanted to make something that mattered to people. So I had a few subjects that I was researching, and then really the subject that kept coming on, that kept popping up basically because of its importance and cruciality, was the subject of media, and more importantly, how the media is controlled by just a handful of corporations. And that really became, for me and for many others and millions of people in the United States and around the world, the most important subject to really look at and pay attention to and to get involved in today, because no matter what you care about, no matter what your primary interest is, whether it's education or politics or culture or economics, we mainly learn about these subjects via the media, via books, films, television, radio. And when the media is controlled by just a handful of very powerful corporations that have not just interest in the media, but they have diverse interests, whether it's in defense or you know, capitalistic markets, that becomes a real problem because we have to really question the information we get from these institutions. And when they control everything, they could really, you know, navigate the population into their own private interests as opposed to integral truth about what's really going on in our society. So Shadows of Liberty is really about that. It's about integral journalists dedicating their lives trying to bring us the truth about what's happening in our communities, what's happening in our country, what's happening in the world. And what we find out is when the media is controlled by just a handful of corporations, we actually get a very different story than what the actual truth is.
You know, I think you're absolutely right. You know, having been a former reporter, I always felt proud being part of the Fourth Estate, and that my job was really, you know, to inform the populace as what the government was actually doing, so they could make the right choice in the ballot box. And you did make an effort to tell the truth. And you know, the right, though, I'll tell you, often accuses the media of being biased towards the left. You know, is this what this is about, or is it something quite different?
I'm sorry, can you please repeat your question? The connection is not the best.
Not a problem.
Your question a bit slower, please.
Okay, all right. You know, the right wing, you know, conservatives often accuse the media of being biased towards the left. Is that what this is about, or is it something quite different?
Well, you could say that it's a bit about that. I mean, there's so many themes about the media that we look at. We look in the film about media not reporting certain stories that are very important or if not crucially important to the population, and a lot of it is not looked at. We look at sensationalist media. We look at how media is influenced by massive corporations such as Nike or Sony or corporations like that. I think the point that you mentioned, that a lot of conservatives mention that the media is biased to the left, basically that's just false. You know, often when we hear that, they refer to networks as NBC or MSNBC. And we have to understand that, you know, NBC, MSNBC, or our networks that are primarily owned by General Electric. And if we look at the history of General Electric, which we look at in our film, they have interest in the most conservative corporate endeavors ever imagined. For example, they have the biggest defense contracts in the Middle East. Yet, a company like General Electric was able to monopolize in the mid-80s a lot of the media in the United States by buying RCA and controlling Universal in California, the NBC network, and a whole lot of other media outlets in the United States and around the world. And when a conservative says that a network like MSNBC or NBC is biased to the left, that's just absolutely false. I mean, there might be the small exception now and again. If we take the example of the run-up to the Iraq War, I mean, they had someone like Phil Donahue, who had a show on MSNBC, and he was one of the very few in the run-up to the war in Iraq that was questioning, just asking normal questions that any citizen would ask. Why are we going to war? What are the facts behind this war that now we all know is a false war and was a false war? And as he asked those questions, as part of MSNBC controlled by General Electric, he was fired. He was run off the air. And he was put off the air at a time when he was having one of the highest ratings, one of the highest TV ratings for his show as part of MSNBC. His producer at the time was Jeff Cohen, who is in our film, and who's been part of this mainstream media throughout his career. But they find out that if you speak even on what the conservatives call a network that's biased to the left, we find out that that's just absolutely false. And it's basically propaganda that is run by these conservative minds, you can say.
Yeah, you know, that's pretty much, you know, congruent to my own personal experiences where perhaps all us guys and gals in the newsroom, you know, might be progressive thinkers, but the guy who owned the paper and, you know, basically signed your paycheck certainly was not, and you kind of had to do what you had to do. You know, now that revelation about Phil Donahue, you know, was that, you know, that's pretty shocking. What are some of the other revelations, you know, this film exposes? Just give people a little preview of what they could see.
Well, like I say, in our film, we look at different themes, and we have six main stories of journalists that are working, you know, as journalists. Most of them are award-winning journalists, Pulitzer Prize-winning. We have a journalist like Roberta Baskin. She's won over 70 journalistic awards in her career, mainly via the CBS network when she was a foreign correspondent there. We tell these stories of journalists who are either reporting on the war or on the U.S. government or about the ill practices of major corporations. And because these stories are so groundbreaking and attack the biggest power arguably in our world, which is the U.S. government and these massive multi-billion dollar corporations, then they run into a conflict of interest because a lot of these corporations and the American government have a lot of influence and actually kind of dictate the news and information that go through their networks. And when a journalist asks some serious questions about the actions of war or corporate practices, it's a conflict of interest, and their lives are turned around, their careers, their personal lives, and they're simply brushed aside. And we see this over and over again throughout history, really. And that's why I thought it was really important to make a feature documentary film that took us 5 years to make and to really update what's really happening in media today. What we also do in the film is that we look at how is it that in a democratic society like the United States, a free country, how is it, and also, you know, with the Constitution that's been in place where you know, we can realize that journalism is the only job, is the only practice that is protected by the U.S. Constitution, you know, freedom to information. Well, how is it that in a country that has a constitution in place, democratic ideals, how is it that just a handful, five corporations, came to control most of everything we hear, read, and see in the United States? So we tell six of the most important stories in media history that actually tell us how it is that the ideal of free information for everyone came to be controlled by very narrow-minded, conservative, powerful corporations with diverse economic interests.
You know, I noticed, you know, reading the the preview of your film, that you've gathered a well-known cast, including both Dan Rather, once the managing editor and anchor of NBC, a decidedly mainstream news source, and Amy Goodman, who is anything but mainstream. What did their experiences have in common?
Yeah, let me just correct you. I think you said NBC there. Dan Rather was the head anchor of
CBS
for 30 years.
Yes, yeah, CBS. Yeah. I'm sorry. Yeah, you're right.
So, thank you for bringing that up. I want to say that in my film, there are 38 contributors that come in and tell their stories and contribute to telling other journalists' stories. Those 38 journalists are... hands down, some of the most integral, award-winning journalists working in the United States today. And also in the past, you just mentioned Dan Rather. He's still working. Everyone in the United States knows Dan Rather. Well, people would be amazed hopefully not that amazed. I'm hoping that some people do get a sense of what's happening with the media in the United States, but I do really, speak out on your network today to ask people to come and see the film and see what Dan Rather has to say after working 30 years at CBS News, one of the most trusted men in America. It's amazing the way he comes out and speaks in our film. And after all of his experiences in mainstream media, he comes out and lays it in black and white. He tells us what's happening in the news, how these massive corporations control information is just absolutely a bad thing, for not only for individuals but for the country and for the world as a whole. So we do look at the you mentioned Roberta Baskin and Dan Rather. We also have people like David Simon. David Simon, the creator of The Wire on HBO, which is owned by Time Warner, also known as one of the Big Five who control news and information. He was a journalist at the Baltimore Sun, one of the best journalists they had. And he kind of comes into the film and contributes when we speak about how these mega mergers were happening in the United States throughout the 80s and 90s and are still happening today as we speak. These multi-billion dollar mergers and how they simply brush away journalists. I mean, they're shrinking newsrooms. In a world where we have more and more people living on Earth, more and more foreign policies, things happening in the country, in our communities. At the same time, newsrooms are shrinking. They're not shrinking by, 5 or 10%. I mean, they're shrinking by like 90 and 95%, 98%. In some cases, 99%. These newsrooms where you had journalists investigating, looking at facts, asking questions where they need to be asked and answered. David Simon comes in, and even though he produces some incredible work, I have to admit, for a network like HBO and Time Warner, his heart and mind is in the right place. He's an integral journalist. He understands what has happened with these mega mergers. He's lived through it, and he comes and lends a voice. And like I say, we have, even people like Danny Glover, who's always been an advocate for freedom of information. He comes and speaks in our film. We have Amy Goodman. We have even Dick Gregory, who was really involved in a story about the journalist Gary Webb. Gary Webb, who was telling us and reporting a story entitled Dark Alliance back in the mid-90s. And Dick Gregory was involved in his story. upholding his story after all the research that Gary Webb had conducted. And again, he speaks just like Dan Rather and David Simon. So we have all these amazing journalists in the film, and it's quite incredible that I'm quite proud of the fact that we were able to gather them and speak as one voice in our film. And I urge everyone to come out and support the film and come and see it next week in Sarasota.
You know, I just want to remind everybody that you're listening to WSLR FM 96.5, your community radio station, and we aren't beholden to any corporations, and that's why we report the news as we see it. And we are speaking to Jean-Philippe Tremblay, who directed a film called Shadows of Liberty that will be screened here at Fogartyville next Thursday on June 5th. You know, that does sound like, you know, a great lineup of interesting folks. You know, we're here at the Surreal News. You know, one of our missions is to report underreported news. And one of our favorites is a guy named Greg Palast, who had difficulty getting on the air here in the United States and actually had to come through the BBC. I mean, do you know of Greg's story?
I know Greg Palast. Maybe you'll have to remind me about his story.
He was the one that broke the story in 2000 of Catherine Harris's manipulation of the voter rolls, which caused George W. Bush to be elected selected over Al Gore, which has certainly changed the course of history in not only this country but the world.
Yes.
And that was a story it's a classic example of a story that, U.S. media just completely ignored. They refused to even acknowledge that such a thing could happen.
Exactly. Well, thank you for reminding me about that. But that's, as you say, it's a typical story that, we could have included in our film, and we tell stories like that. We need to tell these stories more and more, and we even need to repeat these stories. We have to really wake up. This is such an important moment in time. Every time in history, and we see this in our film, every time we have a new technology, whether it's radio at the turn of the last century or television in the 1950s, and now with the internet, every time we have a new technology that's introduced to the mass population, we have this great hope that it's going to bring education, it's going to bring democracy to the people. Well, now with the latest technology, the internet, one of the most incredible advances in communication of all time, we have to realize that these corporations have been working on the internet and how to utilize the internet for decades, even before it was made available to the mass public in the mid-90s. And now with these whistleblowers such as Assange or Ed Snowden, through them and through hundreds of other people, courageous people who are bringing us integral truth about what's happening in our societies, we have to realize that we have to take control of the internet, and the battle is happening right now. It's happening through amazing organizations such as Free Press or Fair and Accuracy in Reporting, and even through the Surreal News. It's really about local independent organizations through which we can fight this battle. And there are some mergers right now that we need to stop, and one that's introduced right now is between Time Warner and Comcast. There's also these new rules that have been that have been proposed by the Obama government that essentially take away the notion of a free and open internet known as net neutrality. And that has been introduced. A vote is going to be happening in the fall. And these organizations, and I'm sure the Surreal News is on top of it as well, all these organizations are fighting this battle, and we as citizens, we must get involved. And one way to do it is next week, come see Shadows of Liberty. And through our website as well, we have a take action section on our website. So that's a way that people can become introduced on how to get involved in this. And you know, sometimes it takes 2 minutes on your computer to get involved, to sign a petition. And you can even take more time if you have it. Otherwise, it's so important to sign these petitions. That takes about 2 minutes out of people's time. So it's really about getting involved, supporting independent media. And, you know, we are also an independent production company. And this is an independent film. We've had great accolades around the world. In Japan, and we've had mainstream distribution. Same thing in Canada. We've had it in Norway, in Israel, where Vera Middle East. We've been nominated for prizes such as best documentary of the year. But in the United States, it is the hardest place for us to get distribution for our film. That's essentially about the United States with 38 of the greatest journalistic Americans that are part of the film. So that's why we have an independent tour. This is a film that's everywhere, but we're doing the grassroots tour of the film. So that's why we're asking for people to come and see the film and to let us know about their comments and get involved if they can.
Yeah, my co-host Steve has a quick comment you know, relating to this.
So again, just thank you for coming on and telling us about your film. We've been looking at this subject for time, and going way back, there was the Smothers Brothers, who were censored from television here, I believe, in the 60s, and we had Dickie Smothers on our show telling us about a film that they did about that came out called Smothered. I don't know if you're aware of that, and that has some of these same themes that we've discussed. And then lately, we've been reporting on Murdoch and News Corp, et cetera, and what's going on there in the UK with wiretapping. They've been getting into trouble doing some illegal wiretaps, and I see sort of a evolution here where we had reporting, which starting out very early on, which was censored, and many of these topics, people had to go to the UK, like Greg Palast, a United States citizen, and join the BBC in order to get things reported here in the United States. And now we have an evolution of Murdoch, which doesn't seem to be really interested in reporters. They're more interested in news items and are even willing to break the law to do that. All right, so any comments on that? And then we're just about done.
Yes, I mean, in our film, we look at News Corporation, owned by Rupert Murdoch. News Corporation is also one of the big five, along with Time Warner, Disney, General Electric, and Viacom. We're talking about these five corporations. And our film focuses on the United States because these five media conglomerates have their headquarters basically in New York and Los Angeles. That's where they are based. And here, yes, we are focusing on the most powerful democracy in the world, which is the United States. And that's why we focus on the United States, because it was important to look at what's happening in the most powerful country in the world. That being said, these corporations, they might operate from the United States, but from the United States, they control news and information and influence it around the world. Here in the UK, news corporations, Rupert Murdoch's News Corporation, controls a lot of the TV, a lot of the media outlets here in the UK, whether it's television, newspapers, book publishing, and, you know, News Corporation's control, just like the other corporations, is global. It's around the world. And they have gone into some trouble here, you know, through their media outlet ownership.
Sorry to interrupt, but we are running out of time. I just want to remind everybody that we're listening to Jean-Philippe Tremblay, who is the director of Shadows of Liberty, which I encourage everyone to come to Fogartyville to see, because as he pointed out, because of its content, it's not getting a real wide release here in the United States, but we will show it here at WSLR-FM. Thanks again, Jean-Philippe.
You've whet our appetite. Thank you, sir.
You have a fabulous day.
Thank you so much for having me on. Thank you.
Great.
Bye.
And we just want to appreciate, he's in the UK. He's calling us. It's like mid-afternoon, their time, joining us here this morning on the Surreal News, and we're so glad he did that. All right, you've been listening to Surreal News on WSLR 96.5 LPFM in Sarasota, Florida. We are your true community radio station. We're it. We are the one that's produced this local radio here, news and public affairs. And this is the Surreal News, your underreported news item show, your weapon of mass instruction, thanks to Greg Powell. All right, coming up, we have complex waveforms, and just remind people the news and views you hear, they are not those WSLRs, board members, volunteers, or anyone else, just to the people that gave them. Take what you like, censor the rest. And we have Mark Zampella with Complex Waveforms, which is coming up right now. Thanks for tuning in. Have a great day.